Chapter 22. Big Willie's Revenge. The palace was on the same side of Berlin, but further west and hogging the best bend of Riverview for itself. Once there, Sean and Einstein joined a milling crowd of other invitees in the grand reception hall. Soon a page came into the room and challenged the flooring to a maintain integrity match with his mace. He announced in a stylized bellow,
"Majestics, sub-majestics, lords, ladies, gentlemen, damsels in excess and lower trophic levels, I give you the one and only His Royal Majesty, by the special thumbs-up of Mr. Biggie, the most imperial of all Germans, the biggest buckstop this side of the tax divide, the king of our very own Prussia, Frederick William Victor Albert Wilhelm II, otherwise known by what is left of his people as Big Willie, the uncontested and uncontestable reigning heavyweight moustache champion of the world."
The group of mighty highs, with the Kaiser at its head, made its whimish way down the line of option-depleted admirers. Einstein seemed used to the tedium and had brought the field equations to read. He marvelled at the intricacies of Karl's results.
"You know," he enthused to Sean, "these calculations help show us that there is a set of conditions, Schwarzi singularity, where we no longer can to distinguish between of time and space or energy or matter. That means that if suspend mat is ein wave, then time is also ein wave, yeah? We are all surface, riding a time wave through suspend mat."
He did a Beach Boy hang 10 and accidentally knocked a plump lady's hat off. Sean thought of the strange underground entrance to the haunted house, his mother and even Schrody the half-dead cat. If this is the case, do you think it is possible to step between the wave fronts and be lost to the timeline? Be in a frame of film, out of sync with a projector shutter?
Yeah, exact so. To step outside time, you would need to in-between jump the arriving time wave fronts. To do this, you would need to be pretty fast. Faster even than me to the pub after school's out, and believe me, that is saying something. So I think in our case, to beat this world record, it is best to cheat.
But nature never cheats.
You think so? Which animal has land speed record all time?
The cheetah.
I rest my case.
Further up the line in attendance, the Kaiser was regaling some neo-vegetarians loudly with tales of his favourite blood sports. "And the time eggs?" Sean asked Einstein. "Do you have any theories about what is causing them?"
"You know, for my magic tricks, when I make a hollow egg to remove the albumen, it is no yolking matter. I am need to make of two holes, and I blow in one, yeah? So, if we think of the Vitruvian crystal as being not a single hole, but in actual a pair of holes, one black and one white, short-circuiting the two sides of the timeline.
A wormhole?
Well, more like a leak in the plumbing, yeah? And if this plumbing is being anything like the my plumbing, the pressure would be enormous. Under it, time would surely to be compressed, perhaps even through ein liquid, which bubbles up on our side as it is forced out by the pressure from the other side.
And do you think this is disturbing the delicate balance between the spend mat and time?
Nein.
No.
Time is not being a fundamental element of the universe. It only can to exist relative to the observer trying to explain what he thinks he's experiencing. Someone trying to remember if he left his umbrella on the tram yesterday or will do it tomorrow.
I see, lied Sean. You're saying time and the reality it creates exist only in the eye of the beholder.
Yeah. But be careful here. While that is probably true, it also may not be the entire story.
Schwarz explained the timeline as being an imbalance in the background spend mat, like an eruption of the sun arching between two charged points.
Yeah, und it lazy. The little shirker quickly resets itself to neutral given half the opportunity,
Sean thought to himself. And would that opportunity be a young idiot who falls down a shaft under a house with the final time egg in his pocket? Einstein continued,
Time-space is like the inner tube of a tire. It's okay till someone put a pin in it, and ours has got a flat.
Sean remembered Laplace's metaphor of the pinprick in the chronoclasmic bubble. So the Vitruvian crystal is such a pin, puncturing a hole in the space-time, collapsing the past and the future back to the time-neutral cosmic background. Power's been right all along. It is me. I am the one who has shorted out the arc of time.
That crazy.
Yes, sorry.
so is probably correct.
They stood for a while in silence. Then Einstein said,
Till today I was stuck on the surface of the Earth. With these equations I can start applying my theory to the entire cosmos. Today the world, tomorrow the universe.
Good, good, they heard someone behind them mutter, accompanied by pen scratching. I could use that. Big Willie had finally reached them. It was then that Sean noticed the Kaiser had a slightly withered left arm. He always carried his gloves in his left, or rested the arm on his sword hilt, in an attempt to make it look longer and stronger. The very embodiment of politics, thought Sean.
How's my circus going? Big Willie asked Einstein, after the professor had whipped up a quick sausage balloon effigy for him. They're doing very well. And Einstein jiggled the box of tent flap takings he had wrestled off the chimpanzee before leaving.
The Kaiser took it and said,
Good. Keep up the good work, or whatever it is you fellows do down there.
He passed on to Sean.
Ah, and this puerile pile of patheticness would be...
Sean Serlpier, your majesticness, said Sean, bowing awkwardly.
Sean Serlpier, interesting, said Big Willie in a faraway kind of voice.
A servant lifted Big Willie's moustache up with a special golden rake, so he could take another puff on his cigar, carried by another servant on what looked like a kebab spit, and then raked it back into place. Never short of irrelevant small talk, the Kaiser went on.
Do you know why, young Serlpier, I grow this fantastic moustache?
To hide your lip wobbling, suggested Sean, guilty of honesty beyond all reasonable tact.
Besides that, you see, it is to remind my people that Big Willie and Mr. Biggie have a thing going on.
Does His Highliness, risked Sean, suddenly suspicious, by any chance add a little footnote of his own to this divine revelation, which involves Germany becoming the ruler of the world?
I wouldn't put it in precisely those terms, but something like that, smiled the grey-heading king. Mind if I put it in exactly those terms? Asked the scruffy corporal behind them, taking notes like crazy in his notebook.
You there, ordered Big Willie. Yes, you, the one with the total failure for a moustache, called the Kaiser at the corporal. Show me your book, and I'll give you a medal. I've got one left over. Don't want to go to all the trouble of putting it back in the bribes box.
Dunno.
The corporal clasped the notebook to his chest defensively.
It's kind of private, for now. What sort of medal is it?
First tell me why you're not at the front,
demanded an enormously fat field marshal next to the Kaiser. This was Hindenburg, whose name was mispronounced intentionally by the other staff officers to sound in German like mountainous backside. The little corporal faked a sore leg.
My cramp,
he said in a wimpy sort of voice.
Mein Kampf?
The Kaiser snatched the notebook from the man.
Good title. But why my struggle? Surely it should be our struggle.
It's a personalization of world woes, what I call the Weltschmelz theory. It involves a meditation technique to develop highly focused paranoia. I use it to while away the long sentry duties. I'm thinking of turning one of the applications into a board game called World Conquest.
No doubt you'll find lots of board players to join you.
The Kaiser tossed the book back to him. Still, a deal is a deal. Take this medal off my hands, would you?
But it is the Iron Cross, stammered the corporal.
Oh, yes, so it is. Any problem with that? Prefer a silver one or maybe gold?
Big Willie indicated his own metallurgical collection on his chest.
But I have already got one of them.
Retcho argumented the corporal.
You've already got one?
The Kaiser flabbered all over his gust.
Jawohl. Some fat guy in a general's uniform stuck it into my chest in 1914. Hurt like life. I missed a whole 6 weeks of carnage and mayhem afterwards, thanks to him, and that was only a second-class one. I suppose that's because I'm Austrian, not a real German. I can't possibly accept a second cross to bear. Nowhere to hang it, you see.
He indicated a skinny, unimpressive chest. Unless they were made into a pair of earrings. His face brightened at the thought.
Corporal,
bellowed the field marshal.
Jawohl.
His right hand snapped up like some strange reflex into a position akin to a policeman stopping traffic.
You take this medal now, like a good boy, and let's not hear any complaints, all right?
The little man sighed.
All he had ever wanted was to be an artist. The Kaiser hung the medal by its ribbon around the corporal's neck. Sean could swear he saw the faintest of green, eerie, glowy light pass from the Kaiser to the soldier when he did so, reminiscent of past regrets, and the little corporal stopped his whinging.
"Oh, and while you're here, give us a quote to repaper the palace, would you?" Big Willie indicated the fading wallpaper that was starting to come off in places. "I can tell you're a paper hanger by your distinctive hand-slap action."
After the Kaiser and his roadies had moved out of the carnage trophy room, the little corporal turned to Einstein and Sean and said in an entirely different and sneering voice,
"Well, well, this is going to be fun. We meet again, Sean Silpierre. Cespuglio, at your disservice."
The corporal indicated a background concave of soldiers in spiked helmets, armed with rifles and bayonets. "The invertebrates?" demanded Sean, unafraid.
"And a licensed firing squad."
The corporal pointed out the Boy Scout-like badges they all wore, showing a comically stylized death squad. He then flicked a lapel of Sean's uniform.
"You are a deserter from the front. Penalty?"
Cespuglio cherished the suspense before saying,
"My entertainment."
"But you still need me. Without me, you have no more need of the invertebrates, and they will abandon you." Sean addressed this more to the soldiers, looking for the centurion among their death is glory faces.
"I'll take that chance," said Cespuglio. "Escort, take the watchbearer to the palace execution ground. I think I'll use the 30-meter range today. You may as well come too, Herr Professor Einstein. I am sure you would like to witness the end of the hopes of scientists against the evil that infests men's souls, i.e. me."
"Thank you for being so considerate," replied the physicist.
As they all marched out in block formation, Cespuglio was in a chatty mood.
"As the Kaiser, I had an execution range set up in the palace grounds for after-dinner entertainment and to add spice to diplomatic negotiations. We hold execution competitions for the guests at different calibers, over 30 metres, 50 metres and 100 metre ranges. I was also thinking of extending the range to implement a new edition of the Cannonball Olympics with some major changes to the rules."
Sean checked to see if Einstein was still following them before he asked his tormentor, "Since I'm no longer a threat to you, would you mind telling me what happened after I left the haunted house in 1800? Where did the watch go?"
"Why should I tell you anything?" replied Cespuglio with one of his favourite sneers.
"It would be gloating over your victim and showing off in an irritating fashion.
Insult on fatality? Good enough reason."
"Yes, I may as well tell, considering you have no future left to make use of it.
After you left us in 1800, the watch disappeared with you, leaving only an image. Napoleon, the little ingrate, had no option but to reabsorb me, still in my weakened condition, in order to keep the invertebrates on his side while he romped around Europe trying to find you and the watch. The watch would be enough because, as we all know, you are drawn to it, as sure as a fly to a Venus flytrap. Snap!"
Cespuglio coordinated this last word with suddenly snapping shut the revolver he had been loading, and Sean immediately regretted jumping. They had left the building now and were walking across a large open courtyard. On the other side, a beautiful garden and orangery stretched away towards the river. Cespuglio continued his story. "That little self-appointed emperor, Napoleon, went crazy. He thought the British had the watch because of their famous Black Watch regiment. Despite the great risk of eardrum perforation from their first line of defence, bagpipes, especially to people of his low altitude, he planned an invasion to look for it. Then I whispered into his ear that it was in Berlin here, and he called off the invasion and invaded Prussia instead. And then when the Austrians mistimed the Battle of Austerlitz so badly, he realized they could not have it either. Then Wellington landed in Portugal and let out rumors that the watch was with him after all, in order to draw Napoleon into a war of devastating attrition in Spain. Finally, Napoleon's spies told him it was in Moscow, which, funnily enough, was actually true. It had been drawn back to Cath the Math's porphyry egg. As soon as he had found it, he abandoned his army to the mercy of the Cossack pawnbroker packs and raced back to Paris
intending to use it to complete the Vitruvian crystal finally, draw you into a trap, and become the Eternal Emperor in my place. He knew, despite having found his precious watch again, that he was, after all, just mortal like any of the rest of you, and was running out of time. He was always a little short in that respect, remembered Sean. But before he could do that, somebody, and Tespulio smiled broadly, betrayed him, and he was captured and sent into exile on the Isle of Elba. He escaped to have one last go at creating himself as the world's master. But his staff misheard his instructions to take him to the VC and took him instead to the Battle of Wassertoiletten. Never heard of it, said Sean, impressed by the story despite himself. That's the local Belgian name for Waterloo. When the incontinent English had finished with the Wassertoiletten, they sent Napoleon, with me still helpless and trapped in him, and the watch, to the island of St. Helena, way down in the south of the Atlantic, where it rains nearly all the time. Sometimes for the peculiar climatic conditions created by the incidents of the Gulf Stream and the Atlantic conveyor belt, but usually just for the sheer heck of it. So Josie was right all along, nodded Sean. He lived out his final days as a wet nappy after all. But how could he lose if he had the invertebrates helping him? Good question. And the good answer? I was rather hoping you could supply me that. Me? Cried Sean in surprise. What do I know? I'm a century behind in current affairs. What did you say to the centurion just before you time-jumped, when you fell on the altar? Nothing, I mean, nothing important.
Tespulio stopped the procession a little short of the execution range. A crowd was gathering around the official's table, and the superior classes were looking down from the more expensive viewing balconies of the palace. Sean fancied he recognized something about a figure in a sergeant's uniform, putting out little white flags to mark the execution.